afternoon. Christmas evening is going to be about a 50% chance of rain. That was your King of the Hill traffic and weather report. You're listening to KSCO. Now it's time to get started with the first hour of KSCO Presents, the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Good afternoon, everyone. Happy Christmas Eve. This cloudy, rainy day in Santa Cruz.
Ho, ho, ho.
Mrs. Future, are you tracking Santa Claus?
I am.
Are you?
Yes.
Where's Santa Claus?
Yes,
now,
he is officially in 4 minutes and 6 seconds going to be in Alta, Norway, in Copenhagen. Or he was last seen in Copenhagen, Denmark. He's on his way to Alta, Norway.
All
so
right.
He's delivered over 3 trillion gifts so far.
3 trillion?
No.
Not million?
Billion.
Billion.
Sorry.
Billion.
I added a few zeros.
Is he Santa Claus for the galaxy?
You know, galactic intelligence. Sometimes I forget we're just on one planet.
Yes, he visits all the stars every night.
That's right. Yeah, I do
Christmas
well in
somewhere.
Santa Cruz sleigh ride there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, no, it's really cute. If you are not aware, NORADSanta.org gives us a real-time reading of Santa's progress around the globe on Christmas Eve. So check it out, people. It's really fun.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Google also has a tracker, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, what does Google say?
Well, that's a good question. What does Google say? I don't know. I'll have to check it.
Okay.
Because we're all into NORAD. I mean, that's the real thing, right? Google.
Yeah.
Google's the newcomer in the block here.
They're official. They've been doing it for a long time. They've been doing it before Google even was alive.
Yeah, let's see. Santa Tracker, Google. Here we go. Google Santa Tracker. Yeah. Give you a little, little music and everything. They said he's in Chad.
Chad, huh?
He's heading to Niger.
Oh, I see.
Western Sub-Sahara.
Do you think Santa and Mrs. Claus took separate sleighs?
Well, he's smart enough to have robots.
Oh, I got it. Oh, he's been going techie, huh?
That's right. Yeah, he has been.
He has an autonomous sleigh now. He doesn't need the reindeer anymore.
Yeah. Maybe he has robot reindeers. I guess one, but I'm thinking.
Right. Give the real reindeer a night
break.
Off for Christmas.
I mean,
their one day
it's a
year.
Lot of work for a reindeer. You'd have to change them all the time, you know. I mean, it's, he's a mythical character, so he will be able to continue his mythical work in many locations at once.
With his mythical autonomous sleigh and robot reindeer. Okay.
Exactly, yeah. So we have a nice Christmas Eve show for you tonight. We have some news, and we have some special guests in the studio, which I look forward to sharing with you. And we have some sad news that Ram Dass died. Right?
Wow.
That's our friend Pat Flanagan and Ram Dass died in the same week.
Wow, end of an era. A certain chapter in consciousness turns the page.
Richard Alpert.
Be here now.
Yeah, I'm sure you've seen it all over the news. But he epitomized the 60s and with Tim Leary and popularizing psychedelics back then and fellow Harvard academic and find spiritual inspiration in India. Died Sunday at his home in Maui.
My favorite joke, you know the Ram Dass joke that he supposedly visited his brother who was in a mental hospital. Maybe he'd have a nervous breakdown.
Yes, I remember that.
And his brother in the mental hospital looked at Ram Dass, who was there with some of his devotees, and Ram Dass is wearing a classic Indian guru robe, looking kind of like a prophet. And his brother says, "I don't understand. How come you dress like a mythical character and you have these devotees and people think you're God, and I think I'm God, and they put me in a loony bin?" And Ram Dass looks at his brother and says, "Well, the thing is that I know that you're God, and I know that I'm God, and I know that everyone else is God. That's the difference."
Instead of you're just being you being God.
That's right. You're not the only one.
Yes. I'm God. So are you.
Right.
Okay, I won't hurt you. I'll believe you. Yeah, he affected a whole generation of people. Be Here Now, originally published in 71, 36 printings of that book, 2 million copies.
I bet it's going to go into reprint now.
Yeah, a classic, a very classic of the 60s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little square book with a blue cover and a round mandala on it. I remember it. It was a beautiful book of poetry, I thought. Nice collection of stories.
Yes. Yes, and more close to home, we had lost our friend Patrick Flanagan, who was another person who was very instrumental in new age thinking.
Right. Yes, Pat Flanagan is the man who taught us how geometry, the physical shapes of geometry, can inspire harmony. And not just he wrote Pyramid Power when he was studying sacred geometries.
Yeah, that's right. That was his classic book, Pyramid Power, from the early. Yes.
But he also was doing all kinds of sound healing workshops where he would play the phi frequency, which is the sound that allows the octaves to be met in the phi frequency is the tone which is harmonious in every octave with itself. And he would play that sound and it would really elevate the mood of everyone in the room. It's very interesting, kind of mysterious.
Yeah, he explored the phi frequency quite in depth. He thought that the phi frequency, which is used by nature, could also be used as a resonant field for cell phones, mm-hmm. that we could use phi frequency for cell phones instead of 3G, 4G, 5G.
Yeah, he really pioneered the idea that we could explore frequencies that were good for us instead of just being ignorant about which frequencies we're embracing for our communications and
in
other
terms
technologies.
Of local politics and awareness, and maybe not so much politics, but local scene. He was a big part of the Goddess Temple in Boulder Creek, which had been started by Christopher Hills and his wife, Penny Slinger Hills.
Right. The Spirulina Empire.
Right. And Patrick had designed and formulated a number of compounds for Light Force, which was a big multi-level marketing company in the 80s.
Yeah. Yeah, seminal work on using hydrogen ions to neutralize free radicals and alkalize your system. Early insights about nutritional health.
Yeah, and we knew him through various adventures, like going to Egypt with him and going to Burning Man and being part of Emerald City, which is a big theme camp at Burning
Man. By the time we met him, he finished his really professional suit career, and he was very interested in elevating consciousness by throwing parties, sponsoring art, having people dance in laser light.
That's right. He joined us on the party path. Party path.
Right.
Yes, where great social change can happen in social events.
I think humans are much more attuned to evolution through their joy frequency, such as you find in those kinds of gatherings, much more than driving them with fear. So he was really an advocate of sharing the joy, getting people all to experience their evolutionary consciousness in a positive setting. And I love that about him.
And if anyone could figure out how to communicate from the other side, as they say, it would be him.
Oh, yeah. Are you asking him to call you now that he's passed?
I would need a call from Pat. Yeah. If he does,
okay,
we share
Pat,
it with our audience.
You heard it.
Yeah.
Uncle Al is waiting for you to get in touch.
Yeah.
In the meantime, we're going to go to our first break for this Christmas Eve, and Dr. Future Show will be back after that. I guess the worst word I need is what I need.
Well, I don't know about raising hell on this one, but I think it's an interesting topic.
Well, yeah. You want to get to heaven, though.
That's true. Yeah, let's see.
I'll take that path. I'll take, you know.
Get you a little bit to get there.
We got to lift it all up, right? Yeah, bring it with us. Yeah, all right. Heaven is the place we create.
So during the break there, our guest, who mostly will be here in the second hour, Dr. Hal Myers, visiting from Montreal, old friend of mine from college, who is one of the world's experts in biofeedback and neurofeedback and all good things dealing with feedback and feedback loops and consciousness, is here in the studio. And while we were talking about communication with the other side, you know, we're suggesting that Mr. Pat Flagon calls in to our station, even though he's in Bordeaux, somewhere else, that there have been other experiments along these lines. Hal, you mentioned something called the spirit phone. What was that reference?
Yeah, well, Dr. Gary Schwartz at the University of Arizona, his wife's mother died, and she started seeing a medium. And she said, Gary, you've got to see this. Now, Gary was, you know, Yale educated and professor of psychology. Uh-huh. And he was quite skeptical. He said, okay, I'll go. And after several sessions, he said, you know, there really is something here. So he did a triple blind study with them. Mm-hmm. And he found they were giving information that they couldn't possibly know. So he wrote several books on, one called The God Experience and another one about the medium experience. But he also was trying to create what he calls a spirit phone because he wanted to find a way of speaking to the spirits.
And, on a regular basis,
he needed something more than sort of on-off. He really wanted to see if he could get some communication going. Yeah. He flew up to Montreal once, and we tried to make something with looking at small changes in temperature because when a spirit enters a room, often people say that there's, you know, temperature gets colder.
Right.
So we put something in sort of an aquarium space and where the temperature was, the thermistor was isolated. Mm-hmm. I don't think he got very far with that, but he worked with light. Mm-hmm. And he had his students, he did a 20-minute baseline where he had a black box where no light could get in at all. Uh-huh. And he invited, first it was a 20-minute baseline, then 20 minutes he invited someone to come in, and or they tried to influence it so there'd be light there by the students. And then he asked Susie Smith, who'd been the medium who passed away, to come into the box and bring in light. And there was some light that came in, he claims.
From the medium?
And he did this several times. She said, when I die, I want to prove to you. I can't wait till I die so I can prove to you there's life after death. So he's actually totally convinced, and he's continuing his studies right now.
Oh, boy. Yeah. All right. The spirit phone.
Would you
research.
Say that's the most compelling that he's come up with so far in terms of...
I haven't spoken to him in about a year and a half or so, so I'm not sure how much farther he's gotten with it.
Yeah.
But he's still very keen on it.
No, good. Yeah. Good. Because it would be nice to get some real evidence, because it seems like death is like a black hole of the event horizon where very little gets passed.
Well, he's absolutely convinced that he's communicating with several people who have passed away.
He's getting real information?
I'm not sure the details right now, but he claims through the medium he was getting that kind of information.
Wow. Well, if you get like where the treasure's buried, stuff like that, I think it.
Not yet.
Okay.
Predicting elections, things like that, you know.
Well, there are a lot of people who have that talent and are of service to people who would like to bridge the big divide that way. Mm.
Yeah, I remember Dr. Grad at McGill, you used to, Hal had an office at the Allen Memorial Institute of Psychiatry at McGill, and right down the hall from Dr. Bernard Grad, who worked quite extensively with Wilhelm Reich in the early days, and who I knew quite well, had a real Krillian photography lab for a little while that same floor. And he used to have psychics and mediums visit him quite regularly to mostly talk to, but occasionally he would try to do experiments. So he's especially interested in healing and paranormal healing capabilities, especially the gift of the laying on of hands. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever met any of those folks when they were passing by there, Hal, but it was...
I did. I mean, it was very interesting. He had an older gentleman come over one time, and they had a woman who was... and the fellow put his fingers in her ears, and she says, I hear a crackling sound. Suddenly she could hear, which was really interesting. And so I actually whispered something, can you hear me? And she, Yeah, I can hear you. I can hear you. I don't know how long it lasted, but it was quite interesting. Then he did these experiments with the barley seeds, where he had healers. Estebani was the name, one
yes,
of the healers.
Dr. Estebani.
And he'd hold on to the water and treated the water, and then they'd feed the plants the water. And the barley seeds with the treated water grew much, much more quickly than the ones that weren't treated.
Suggesting that maybe there was something of the healing capacities passed into the water.
Yeah, energetic changes. That's
sure.
Right.
Yeah. And that's pre-Dr. Emoto, right?
That was... Yeah. Yeah, this is
years before.
This is 75, 76.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is nice. It was nice to see the memorial, Al Memorial, so get a name for that sort of research, as opposed to the previous generation, which was doing the MK Ultra stuff with the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
Same facility.
Right.
Right.
So yeah, every era we keep looking for scientific evidence of the ancient ways of magic, right?
Yeah. Still, he was kind of an unusual, Dr. Grant had an unusual reputation with the other scientists in the area. Most scientists don't study stuff like this.
He had an orgone accumulator that he was working with from Wilhelm Reich.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, orgone accumulator. Orgone was Reich's description of a life force, an energy that is kind of like electricity but is alive and is part of what makes a person a living, is their life force, their life energy.
Hmm.
And he believed it really was a real energy. But scientists today still haven't really been able to define a life energy, unless you know something I don't know. No.
Well, we've done a few shows with the people who I think probably are still on the leading edge of that research up at IONS.
Yes, the noetic sciences. Mm.
Yeah, and Lauren Carpenter, I know, is very interested in finding the right technology to detect the effect of thought and its influence on matter. And he has some theories he's working with around that.
Yes, if anyone can figure that, it's Lauren. I don't think you've met Lauren yet. He was the chief scientist of Pixar.
Oh, okay.
And he's taken an interest in psi phenomenon since he retired from Pixar. As also a Disney Imagineer, having designed various rides at Disneyland, he's very interested in.
Exciting.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, and of course you're familiar with Dean Radin.
Sure.
And Dean Radin is doing his research there at IONS as well.
Okay.
Yeah. We went to their conference a little bit earlier this year, and they were doing some surveys of people who had the gift of clairvoyance, and that was being led by a woman who considered herself a scientist, but she was the daughter of a family of very gifted mediums and seers. And so her work is very much to validate this family tradition that she comes from with means that can be understood by a more scientific community.
Hal's been more involved recently with Singularity University, right? And you went to their program for a year, right?
Yeah, I went to their second executive training program. The first one was in, I think, late 2009, and I heard about this, and I said, you know, this is something I'm really interested in. Mm. They're talking about exponential technology, how Moore's Law shows how computers double in power approximately every year since 1968 or so, and stay at the same price. And they found, Ray Kurzweil wrote a book called The Singularity is Near, and he found that the same thing was happening in artificial intelligence, genetics, robotics, medicine, et cetera, in like 30 different areas. And he realized that no one was really teaching the exponential changes this way, that people are thinking linearly, that something doubles in a year, you might have twice the knowledge, or just increases linearly. But if you do it exponentially, in 10 years, you have 1,000 times the knowledge. And they're finding now that in medicine, it's doubling every 70 days. So it's incredibly fast, and you'll see advances happening really, really rapidly now. Mm-hmm. And so I got involved with that, and Singularity, the executive training program, was just wonderful in terms of bringing in the smartest people in the world. They have a program still ongoing where they bring in about 80 people in the summer for I think it's a 8-week program.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to come in with an idea of how they can affect a million people in their local population.
Oh, that's
in
it. So how you have an idea that can affect a million people.
That's it. So, and then they have tons of startups. And so when I was there, they were a not-for-profit, and they wanted to transition to a B Corp where they could make money off these startups to keep so they could survive well. Mm-hmm. So they asked me and two others if we could take over the not-for-profit. And so we've been giving out some money each year to not-for-profits based on some of the money that was left. And it keeps me involved in that area, which is exciting. Mm-hmm. And they're doing some exciting work, and they've got chapters all over the world. So just look up singularityuniversity.org if you're interested in becoming involved.
That's over in Silicon Valley.
In Mountain View.
Mountain View, specifically, yeah. Are they associated with real startups?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they out of their summer program, many, many startups have happened already.
Spun off from Singularity.
That's right, yeah.
Which ones do you think are the most interesting?
Well, they had some interesting, like 3D printing was some of them, and some car startups. And there's just, you know, there's a ton of them. If you just go on their website, you'll be able to see it. Mm-hmm. And also Peter Diamandis is the other co-founder along with Ray Kurzweil.
Of course, known for founding the XPRIZE.
Exactly. And so, and you know, he's a brilliant guy. And off of that also is Daniel Kraft has come out with the Exponential Medicine Conference, which is annual. And you can go on the Exponential Medicine website. And all the talks are there. They're free. It's really, I mean, some of the changes are incredible. It's happening so quickly.
You sent me the links to that, and I was just blown away. Paul Stamets mm-hmm. on Mycelial Networks. Who knew that mycelial networks are so critical to life, that they exist inside us as well?
Yes.
For example.
Paul Stamets presents mycelial networks as our evolutionary siblings. They decided to take a path of evolution where they digested the environment externally. We decided to take a path of evolution where we digested things internally. And other than that, we're very similar in the way that we evolve and bring our intelligence to shape our world. Same kind of sentience.
Mm. Now, regenerative medicine, that include...
It's time for us to go to a break.
Okay. All right. Let's take a break.
So hold that thought.
All right.
We'll be right back with the Dr. Future Show.
All right. We'll see you in a minute. We're talking to Dr. Hal Myers, Thought Technology. Be right back. Okay, welcome back to the show. Yeah, we're talking to Dr. Hal Myers from Thought Technology, a neurofeedback expert, biofeedback. I was going to ask him about regenerative medicine and when we'll have spare body parts, where we'll leave the dark ages and be free to grow new body parts when we need them. Kind of like our cars, only for our bodies. But we're going to hold that thought just for a moment because we have a caller, Mrs. Future, right?
We do. We have a dear friend, Master Now. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey. Hello. Hello, dear futures. Am I in this space and time now?
You are
yes.
now. Yeah, you're here now.
I am.
Present.
This is not Pat Flanagan, but I got to play Pat Flanagan's higher self in a time space not too long ago.
Oh, yeah.
He sent a message and says, if you will put on your neurophones and hold hands at the strike of midnight on New Year's Eve, he will do his best to beam in.
Wow.
If you've misplaced your neurophone and you want to try something else, then go back and rewatch the 2000, going into 2001, 8 minute that you did going onto the clock tower.
Oh,
on the history
of yes.
How we got here and now. And finally, he did have one message that wanted me to deliver.
Okay.
And I hope I can do this justice.
Through Master Now.
Are you ready for that?
I'm ready for your
taking
transmission,
notes.
Master Now. Go for it.
Okay, here we go. It went along the lines of, you can't die, no matter how you try. You're going to live forever, no matter what you do. You can jump from a moving train. You can even crash in an aeroplane. You can kiss this world goodbye, but you can't die. Happy holidays.
Shades
Thank
of
you for that,
Pat
Master
Flanagan
now.
And Jim Palmer, I believe.
happy holidays, my friend.
Happy holidays. Thank you.
We love you now.
Yes. Oh, thanks for calling, too. Master Now. Good
Thank
to hear
you
from
so.
You.
You are so very welcome.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Happy holidays. Fare thee well.
Happy.
So there you have it. You can't die. And, well.
But no matter how hard you try.
Yeah,
well, there's a lot of beliefs around this world.
Yeah. So, regenerative medicine and spare body parts, Hal. What do you think the status of that is?
Ray Kurzweil wrote a book called Live Long Enough to Live Forever.
Uh-huh.
And he says, at the rate at which medicine is advancing, that if you can just discover something that'll let you live for another 3 to 5 years, by the time 3 to 5 years comes, there's about 250 times the knowledge or more. Mm. And then you can live another 3 to 5 years, etc. And so the idea is just keep, you just wait for the advances in the technology. With respect to regenerative medicine, they're talking about growing body parts.
Mm-hmm.
3D printing is advancing significantly. We can actually put down cells and stem cells.
Mm.
And you could have a scaffold that is filled, like from a deceased person or an animal.
Mm-hmm.
And it will actually form into heart cells or blood vessels or kidneys, livers, lungs. And it's advancing. We haven't got to the point where we're... I think they did it at a trachea. And ears. I think they've done some that
ears.
Actually
yeah,
been,
I've seen the ears on the mouse
done recently, but okay. The more complex things like the kidney, liver, and lungs are coming along. They've got heart cells that are beating. They even have an artificial brain that seems to be producing neurons and connections.
Yes, the mini brains. Yeah, we've talked about the mini brains.
Yeah, I mean, so it's coming along quite quickly, actually. As I said, every 70 days or so, it's doubling in knowledge. So
what does that translate into,
major
though?
Cures.
I mean, does that mean that we suddenly understand scaffolding and we can grow faster?
Well, and one of the nice things, if you can use your own stem cells, your own cells, you won't have to worry about rejection.
Right.
And now they can remove all the cells from an individual's kidneys or whatever and start populating them, or, you know, for trachea or whatever. So you just have the stem cells grow into whatever you need.
Hmm. So the stem cells are pluripotent. They're able to become any organ.
That's right.
About that.
That's right, yeah.
With your own stem cells. So you don't even need stem cells of anyone else other than your own.
That's right.
Wow. But it's not to the point where we actually have spare body parts yet.
Not yet, but it's actually getting very close.
So what do you think, 5 years?
It's always one of those things. Well, that's 250 times the knowledge.
Don't be afraid to prognosticate.
Well,
it's the end of the year.
I would say for sure
they're doing some kind of surgery with ears. I thought that there was some ears that
ears
were
and trachea
being developed.
And, yeah, those parts are already here. So it's coming quite quickly. That's mm-hmm. right.
And with the mini brain, you'll be able to get a new brain too?
Yeah, if I only had a brain for a new one.
Well, you know, I did play the Scarecrow in Pat Flanagan's Wizard of Oz. Yes, he was the wizard.
Mm-hmm.
I was the Scarecrow. Mrs. Future, you never guess what she was.
I'll get you, my pretty.
Hey, that's right. She's the Wicked Witch.
The West.
The West, that's right. She's pretty good at it. You should see her in green paint. It's hilarious.
Yeah, well, this is my costume.
So some of the things that we talk about every week on the news, I often get from Hal's feed, because Hal's tracking a lot of data. I've got a couple things that you put in the feed this week. One was the new material that allows batteries to become self-healing, University of Illinois, solid polymer-based electrolyte that can self-heal after damage. And that's one of our big topics, is that batteries will change everything. If we can have a breakthrough in battery technology, we would be able to go electric really fast, for example, and it would change the whole oil thing. So you track that too, right? That's the battery world is.
And also, the major thing about lithium is you want something that's safer if you can. And so these electrodes seem to be safer. They don't explode. They're pierced. You're trying to get better efficiency out of the batteries, but also the safety from the batteries. That's a big concern when you're transporting the batteries.
Oh, yeah.
In large, because they're so dense. In a car, you've got maybe 3,000 of these small lithium batteries in there. It conceivably, in an accident, something could happen. I think they had a problem on one of the airplanes with one of the battery packs.
When I tried to mail something in the post office, they ask you, is there any lithium batteries in that
That's
package?
Right.
And
yeah.
Invariably, there are. They seem to be embedded in just about everything now.
Yeah, I mean, the nice thing is that so many people working on it that there's bound to be some major advances soon. And also in solar cells, the efficiency is going up. The cost of solar now is really inexpensive compared to any other source. So it's gotten, so it's actually cheaper than just about any other source for generating electricity. So now it's just, you know, integrating it into the grid and getting people to come on board to use it, and getting the companies that have the embedded structure to go along with allowing the grid to happen and allow people to have their own power sources and share it.
It's a huge shift, right? I mean, it's moving away from a central grid idea for power to a decentralized one.
But it's also safer, obviously. I mean, in terms of if there's some disruption or some terrorist attack on the grid, you've got your own source of power, which is really important.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But though.
So, yeah. Distributed and autonomous. You're generating your own with the sun, the renewable source.
As long as the batteries don't catch on fire, I guess we're okay.
Yeah. That's right.
Well, it seems like we're getting closer to a critical mass of people at least accepting the idea that we can do a solar battery solution for all of these energy needs. It used to just be like a rumor.
Yeah, I'm excited. I just bought a Tesla 3. I've driven
it. Oh, you're a true believer.
Only a half day, and then we left from Montreal to come here.
So oh, boy. Did you go 0 to 60?
You just got it, really?
Garage. Yeah,
oh,
sitting
wow.
in the garage, hopefully staying warm at -5 yeah. degrees Fahrenheit yeah. right now.
Is it on a solar charger?
Nope.
Not solar.
Not yet.
They have an inductive charger for it, you know.
Well, the problem in Canada, it's not quite as efficient using solar there, but especially the winters and all.
Mm-hmm. But did you get it fully loaded? And does it have the autonomous driving system?
It's got the extended, but not the super. The guy said don't buy it until they actually have the autonomous features, and then you can add that on after.
Okay.
Yeah. Right, it's just a software update. You have the basic materials.
It's cool, but I'll tell you something. I've had an Infiniti Q50, which has the autonomous driving, maybe able to, the adaptive cruise control. I love it. It takes so much stress out of trying to follow the car in front of you. Mm. And I notice the difference just driving in the rental car, that you're constantly aware you got to keep adjusting your speed fast and slow. And even without the lane changing and all, just being able to follow the car, set a speed that you want to go to and have it slow down. And if you get distracted, it'll stop dead.
It keeps you at the same distance from the car in front of you.
Yeah, you set the distance you want, and it'll just, you say, like, I want to go 70 miles an hour, and it'll just go 70. Someone cuts in front of you, it slows down to 50. And just follows them and then speeds up again.
Yeah, adaptive cruise control. I mean, there's a lot of...
There's many. Most of the cars have that now in the new cars.
That's normal now. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, and so do they have the sensors that give them feedback? How does this adaptive cruise control work?
Usually like radar or something?
I think it's laser or radar sensing in the front. It's a great feature. It's a great safety feature. And if and when autonomous cars really do work efficiently and safely, it's going to have a huge impact. You'll have so many fewer accidents, maybe 2 or 3 or 5% of the accidents you have. So instead of 2 million injuries a year, you might come down to 1,000 or so.
And what are we going to do with all the overpopulation? Oh my gosh, we can't go there.
But 47,000 apparently people die or so in the U.S. alone.
That's huge. Yeah. And it's unbelievable. So, it's like a major disease.
But then you have to think of all the physical therapists and the car repair shops and the insurance. You won't really need, the cars will self-insure. The impact of all this is going to be huge.
Sure,
the of course, the truck drivers and the taxi drivers, and everything's going to be autonomous. Yeah. So it'll just be something you get in and you just, like you jump on a bus, a private
bus. What
about
those radar speeding tickets that are funding the highway patrol?
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, the reality is they could track you. Your phone is being tracked all the time. As you notice from your GPS and you're like using Waze, it'll tell you your speed. They just have to say, okay, anybody going through this zone who's going more than X over the speed limit, we're giving a ticket automatically to. The car gets a ticket. They don't have to bother with radar or anything like that.
Yes, it sounds like, you ever seen Jetsons? They have it where you get the ticket and you see the judge right away, before you even leave the ticket. Okay, well, we're talking to Hal Myers here at KSEO and Dr. Future Show, Dr. and Mrs. Future Show. We'll be right back after the break. And we have a caller, Mrs. Future?
Yes,
okay,
we do.
Okay, well, get to our caller after the break. See you in a moment. All right, welcome back to the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show, on the air with Dr. Hal Myers from Montreal and Thought Technology. And on the phone, we have Dawn from Toronto.
First time caller to our show.
Hey,
hi, Dawn.
Hello. This is Sister Future.
Yes.
Otherwise known as your little sister, Dawn.
That's right, my little sister.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Merry Christmas to you, too.
Yeah, great to hear from you on the air. Wonderful.
Yeah, I just wanted to call in and be part of your show and just wish you and all of your listeners a beautiful Merry, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year in advance of that.
Thank you so much.
Sending my love to all who are listening. Okay?
Yeah, did you make it safely to Montreal from Toronto?
I did indeed. A little hop, skip, and a jump to Montreal to spend time with Mother Future, if you will, and who are just enjoying the evening. and hey. Listening to your soul chorus together.
Dinner time there, too, right? 3 hours later.
It is. It's getting to be dinner time. We're waiting for the dinner bell to ring and just having a cocktail or two.
Aww.
And like I said, listening to your show and thinking good thoughts about you all. And
I'm so glad you chose to call in. It's nice to spend that time together.
Yeah, it's my sis, my little sister.
So I'm going to let you guys go and wish you a wonderful evening and get back to your show, all right?
All right.
Silva to Mother
Love
Future
you,
and Papa Future there.
All right. Much love to you both.
All you too. Right. Bye-bye.
There you go. Takes a holiday.
It brings that. Well, it's a family vacation.
Novelty and, messages.
Yeah. We're having a few friends over for Christmas Eve dinner ourselves. So.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's nice to hear from the loved ones that you can't be with on the holidays to at least talk to them.
That's right. It's a really great day to reach out to people that you really want to talk to.
Yeah. So back to we were talking about the cars going autonomous. Do you really think that's going to happen in mass, Hal? Do you think we're going to not drive soon as a culture?
I've been reading several of the articles, and it's not happening as fast. Fully autonomous cars, it's going to be a while. I saw one study where they had pedestrians crossing around after a car came around the corner, and so many of them got wiped out by the autonomous cars.
Really?
They're not quite...
That was a test?
They're not quite there yet.
Wow.
I mean, it's very, very complex. I mean, somebody running out, trying to discern a small object from a child... And the cars have a tendency to be overly cautious also, so drivers behind them aren't too happy about that either.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be a while. Fully autonomous is going to be a while.
Yeah.
So it'll be drivers with assisted driving.
Yeah, and there's certain conditions. Right now, they'll put a truck on an on-ramp on a highway without a driver, and there's a driver to take over as it gets off the off-ramp. They're doing that already now.
Hmm.
So cars or trucks are being driven like that. It's coming, but it's got to be in limited circumstances and not through, busy cities and all.
Yeah, it seems like there would be a certain point where you might need separate roads from cars that are fully autonomous and those that are driven with a driver.
You know, once they've mapped out the roads well, then they know what to expect on a normal road. You're not going to have pedestrians generally walking around a highway on an expressway.
Mm.
For navigating a busy city, it's still a while away, I think.
Right. We can still trust ourselves. We don't have to turn over all our decisions to the robots and the machines.
The tricky thing is, unfortunately, I know a fellow from Montreal who fell asleep in his Tesla and ended up 200 miles later in Toronto.
I see. It just didn't take him home, huh? Because I understand in the 19th century, we did have autonomous vehicles. They're basically horses.
That's right.
The driver,
take us home, Nelly.
It would take you home when you come out of the bar. He took it to Toronto, huh?
Wow. Yeah, see?
My point really was that people become too reliant on them. Some of the crashes are people were watching DVDs or just looking down their laps on their phones or whatever, and so they're not really paying attention at all. The Tesla, you have to have your hands on the steering wheel, otherwise it
beeps at you, right?
Beeps, it'll stop by going autonomous.
Oh. Okay, well.
It takes it off and puts it on manual.
They have to have some safeguards that keep the human engaged.
Yeah, Cadillac and others have some, eye gaze. They can see, looking for drowsy drivers when they don't move, or the movement on the steering wheel tells you whether or not the person's engaged in any way.
Mm-hmm. That sounds useful.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, we just got this in. Thank you, Gregory, in Long Beach, to send us a little article on how Trump's Christmas gift to big oil, killing hopes of electric car tax credit extension.
Hmm. Yeah. How does one guy have all that power? Isn't this a democracy?
Well, tax credits.
Tax credits should be determined by the Congress, don't you think? Why does one guy get to decide?
Consumers who purchase an EV can claim a credit of up to $7,500. I think they have that in Canada too, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the credit phases out once the auto manufacturers sell 200,000 of qualifying vehicles. Now, both Tesla and GM have hit the 200,000 vehicle cap, and they've been lobbying for an extension. And there's a bipartisan proposal that's supposed to allow a $7,000 credit for another 400,000 vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
But that proposal, called the Driving America Forward Act, was rolled into another package of incentives, renewable energy. The groups tied to that are being having to deal with the Coke network, which is backed by oil industry, and they're trying to kill the incentives. It's a big battle in Cokes.
Hey, maybe this is a moment to plug the YouTube video that you played for me the other day by Michael Douglas. Did you remember what? Could you direct people to that?
I'll have to figure that out.
Maybe just Google Michael Douglas. That was fixing democracy, something like that, right?
Yeah, that's a whole other topic.
Very interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's very political.
Yes. Well, it was about how in the 60s there was a lot more ability for legislators to follow the will of the people because they weren't financed by the two-party system. And now people must adhere to the two-party system, which diverges hugely from the will of the people, and there's no incentive for them to honor the will of the people.
Yeah. Our government's getting more and more remote from the will of the people, and the only way to get back to that was to where the people lead. The people lead, the leaders will follow. And how do the people lead? And that's where the new technologies come in, allows us to communicate with each other and have a voice, a collective voice. That
social networking, meetups.
And then the other layer to that is that it's easier to work with local politicians and local government agencies than it is with federal. You know, so you start with what you do have influence on and then develop an influence there, and then that can build to a federal thing. At least that's the conventional wisdom.
Sure. That's how democracy is supposed to work. Yeah. It works way better locally than it does from afar. When they try and impose democracy from an aggregated power source like a senator who has a vote that represents millions of people, it's very hard for that vote to truly acknowledge the diversity of the millions of people that are represented.
And getting out of the block of having a dual-party system. There's so many democracies have multiple parties, like in Canada, right, for example. And when you say that it works a little bit better, you don't quite get this.
You know, the nice thing about that is if two of the parties get together and outvote the ruling party, you have a vote of, it's called a vote of non-confidence, and the government falls, and within a month or so you have another vote, and the parties determine who's their leader is going to be. So it's not 2 years leading up to an election. It's basically, okay, we'll have, you know, I think Joe should lead our party, and we're going to go to the people and promote Joe as a leader, and the people vote, and it's all done within a month or two. It's so much simpler system, and certainly a lot more cost effective, to say the least.
And more representative.
And changes.
And you can change the government very quickly if you're unhappy with the government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that seems to work quite well for a number of countries.
Yeah. Right? I think it's much more efficient and fair.
So lots to look forward to in terms of maybe updating democracy in this country. Mm-hmm. We've got a few models of countries here.
All right. Well, diversity rules. Decentralization, lead the way.
Well, you know, the other thing, of course, in Canada is that we have free health care, and although some people criticize it, sometimes it takes too long and all, it's phenomenal. My business partner he collapsed with a heart valve problem, and he was rushed to the hospital, coronary care unit, put in a pacemaker, a defibrillator, 6 days or so, zero cost.
Right. Meanwhile, here in this country, they're enacting policies that make sure that everyone who's trying to cover their own health care gets bankrupt. And the only people that are covered are people who are destitute. And then they're treating those people like guinea pigs.
But it's the only country, I believe, in the Western world that doesn't have universal health care.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's hard for us as Canadians to understand this.
Yeah, it's hard for us as Americans to understand, too. Hey, KCO, Santa Cruz.
And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the show. And we have in the studio Dr. Hal Myers, a PhD, a co-founder, president of Thought Technology. Hal conceived and designed the original Thought Technology products, including the best-selling GSR2, which is the first biofeedback device I actually experienced myself back in the 70s.
Galvanic skin response, right?
Yes. And since then, Hal has helped to define and direct new product development for Thought Technology, has 79 employees today selling biofeedback equipment all over the world. So welcome to the show again.
Thank you.
For the uninitiated, Hal, can you tell the audience what biofeedback is and how, where it began?
Biofeedback is simply the process of monitoring any physiological signal in the body and feeding it back through sound or light or vibration or many other different any other technique, which will give you information on very small changes in the signal. So, for example, if you're trying to decrease your heart rate because you've got a high heart rate in your, or for stress, we could give you feedback specifically on very small changes in heart rate, each beat, and allow you to try to change it. And we can give you techniques to do that. But basically, it's called operant conditioning. It comes from animal experiments where you'd have an animal peck around in its cage until it discovered a lever. And when they hit the lever, they get a pellet of food. And then they'd eventually start pecking that lever over and over and over again. So they basically discover it themselves. And it's the same thing with biofeedback. You can get some hints, but then finally you discover within your body what it is, what kind of signals that happen when you do something. Maybe you breathe at 6 breaths per minute, or you just focus more and relax, and suddenly the signals will occur that you want.
Is there any natural forms of biofeedback where we just do it without even much thinking about it, or does it require this?
Well, your body is a biofeedback device. I mean, it's a homeostatic device. If you had to think about how your blood has to pump, your heart rate, you know, the kidneys function.
Or your breathing.
Everything. Imagine if you had to make that decision every moment to moment on how to keep your body moving.
There's a lot of stuff to track.
That's right. So what we're looking at is sort of abnormalities or anomalies that are related to stress or whatever, or some dysfunction in the body. So there's a lot of conditions we can work with, including attention deficit disorder, where you can train a child or an adult to change their brainwave pattern. We're looking at something called the sensory motor rhythm. That's a rhythm that occurs, it's related to motor activity and motor sensing, but it seems to be the state that is ideal for focus and concentration. And what you want to do is eliminate the other frequencies, theta, which is a slow sort of sleepy wave, and high beta, which is ruminations and muscle tension. So you'll provide a user with a screen that shows the three bands and tell them to suppress these two and enhance the SMR activity. And you can do that with children through a juggler will juggle, or a little train will move, or something that just allows them to see the progress. They don't really have to know what the signal is doing. They just have to discover what it is in their brains that allows them to make those signals go in the right direction.
How does the results of biofeedback compare to, say, the use of drugs?
Yeah, I mean, initially, a lot of the children will show up on Ritalin, Adderall, Concerta, and you wean them from that as you go along, and typically take about 30 to 40 sessions. But then after that, generally, you're drug-free, and it lasts. It's a skill that you learn. That's the important thing. Biofeedback, it's like a tennis instructor. You don't take your tennis instructor on the court with you when you go play. You've learned the skills. You've learned how to hit it in the proper direction with the proper amount of force. And so you've learned the skill. It's the same thing. Your brain is plastic, and the neuroplasticity sets in, and suddenly you can do what it is that you weren't doing. And the natural state becomes the state of being able to pay attention and not fall asleep when you're studying or whatever.
So it's learning these skills, and using the feedback helps you learn these skills.
That's right. That's right.
So you focus mostly on the busy vibrations, but do you focus on other vibrations to enhance things like sleep or...
Yeah, well, sleep actually can be helped by this SMR training as well, but you can also do a closed eyes alpha training. When you close your eyes, the alpha rhythm is sort of a rhythm that goes throughout the whole brain, and normally when you close your eyes, that you'll get a large alpha rhythm. So you can do that training, have a tone, so when you're in the state, you'll have woo-woo-woo-woo-woo, and you're trying to get the frequency up or just a tone on. And again, it's something that you can develop relatively quickly. It's interesting because people who've had problems with substance abuse, drug and alcohol, often are trying to escape from the alpha frequency area where they're more prone to emotional responses. The drugs are often used to suppress those feelings, and they're escaping it. So when you bring them into therapy and you work with that, it's really important generally to have a therapist there to help them work through the problems that emerge when they start producing those alpha.
A combination of things with biofeedback with therapy.
That's right. It's really, it's ideal for something like that specifically. But for stress control, like the little GSR, the GSR2 that I designed in, well, the first one was 75, then 78. We sold several hundred thousand of those. And those are just generally to get in touch with stress. So when you put your fingers on this device, you hear a tone like, and then if I just say, I'm going to ask you an embarrassing question, then go, And it's extremely sensitive and extremely quick. And so you can learn to...
Yeah, like a lie detector?
It's like a lie detector. It is one of the basis.
So if you learn biofeedback, does that mean you can fake out a lie detector?
Well, I think you can to some extent, but it also measures blood pressure, lie detection, movement.
Okay, it's just one of the variables. Yeah.
But I think you could, actually. I think there are some people who, they say psychopaths have no real emotional feelings in some ways. Mm. So that ask them a question, they can lie very easily and believe themselves.
Yeah.
And so they can pass a lie detector sometimes that way.
Yeah, the key is to believe your own lies.
There's many, many different things we can monitor. We can look at brainwave activity, muscle activity. And muscle activity is used for rehabilitation. So, for example, if you've had a stroke, we can monitor, let's say your arm is paralyzed. We put a very sensitive electrode on your arm, and it picks up on the residual muscle activity. You set a little threshold where the person just has to try and get above, just a tiny bit above the activity that you can't actually visually see in the arm. But on screen you can see it because the sensors are so sensitive. When they get above that, we give them an electrical shock stimulation, which makes the hand contract to model the response. And then you set the threshold higher and higher, and gradually you start to see the movement on its own, and then they're getting the visual feedback. And it's very effective. And if you look at what's happening in the brain finds a collateral area to enhance, even though it doesn't necessarily cure the damaged area, but it actually will enhance areas around it. It's very successful. It's also useful for any kind of sports injuries, muscle feedback. And it's being used by our Chinese distributors for cerebral palsy with children especially.
Can you learn how to feel where maybe you don't have feeling in your hands anymore?
Well, it's important. It's not, I don't think so much feeling, but specifically regaining muscle control over, you know, there's people doing hand therapy. That's
I
right.
See. Yeah.
Giving feedback
so
on
paralysis
that.
Can work with paralysis patients?
Well, that's it. This stroke rehab, right. For example. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to go to a break for a moment. We're talking to Dr. Hal Myers on biofeedback, and I'd like to talk about the difference between biofeedback and neurofeedback. What is that all about, and how does that compare with biofeedback? We'll be back after the break. Okay, welcome back to the show. Yeah, we're getting lots of good feedback on the show here. Speaking of feedback, Mihai even says that singularityuniversity.org is showing a DNS error on their website. Okay, thanks, Mihai. I don't know what to do about that, but...
They're getting too many hits. Yeah. Look what you did.
I destroyed them, I guess.
I guess so. We're talking to Dr. Hal Myers of Thought Technology Limited in Montreal. So we have a caller on the line.
We do. We have George in Tiburon who wants to talk about the future of biofeedback.
George, hey, welcome to the show. Before we bring him on, tell us a little bit about George Hell.
George is a real pioneer. George started in biofeedback around 1970 and had the Biofeedback Institute of San Francisco, and with many clinicians for many years has done some really amazing work and even designed some of his own equipment. We've been playing with him for years, and he's been very effective in his work, and we're good friends.
Well, welcome to the show, George.
Well, thank you. I was hoping to slip in here without being even recognized.
Good luck with that.
But I guess my voice gave me away. I wanted to just throw my two cents in because Hal has worked very hard with this company of making equipment available at such quality. But I think that we also need to now move into the future of biofeedback and the new wearables and apps. And I was going to ask you a little bit about what you thought about the new wearables and apps. And I wanted to talk a little bit about my feeling about the health technology revolution.
Yeah, it's funny you mention that because during the break, Hal was just mentioning the idea that we should bring up wearables.
Yeah, you guys are really insane.
You guys are on the same page here. And that's great. So, Hal, what do you think?
Well, we actually designed a unit back in 2007 that looks at, you put it on your finger, picks up skin conductors, temperature, heart rate, heart rate variability, and respiration if you hold it against your skin.
Right.
And we didn't do much. We were too busy with other clinical products. So we've brought it out a few years ago, and we now have it working with our fancy software and with Android and iPhones. It was designed mostly for clinicians to send home with their patients to train at home, so they could basically do the same thing they were doing in the clinic at home, to teach them relaxation skills or focus skills, and, you know, getting into flow states and dealing with the desensitization for phobias. And there's many, many applications for it. And we're currently developing a whole line of wearable products, and one of them will be a muscle sensor, an EMG sensor that you can wear anywhere for, let's say, bruxism, where you're clenching your jaw, and it'll warn you if you hold it for more than a few seconds or lift your shoulder too much. So, you know, you're at your computer, you're in a really improper posture, it'll remind you that you're, you know, it'll go beep, and or it'll just vibrate, actually, and let you know that you're doing, you know, inappropriate muscle activity. Also for posture and also for breathing. So I designed a breathing monitor back in the mid-70s to remind me to breathe every X seconds while I was doing my doctorate. It made me sit up more, sit up straight, and be able to be more relaxed at the end of the day. And I've got something actually you can purchase. It's called Easy Air Light, L-I-G-H-T, and it's a light that breathes at about 6 breaths per minute, so you fall to pace. If you look it up on YouTube, you see the Easy Air Light 2019. You can just put it on your desk and you just follow it. Breathing at 6 breaths per minute does what's called the respiratory sinus arrhythmia. Your heart rate goes up as you breathe in and goes down as you breathe out. And it's a good way to improve vagal tone, which is sort of the relaxing autonomic activity in your body.
Well, I think that this is really the revolution. And Hal, I'm so happy to hear that you're moving ahead on, you know, you're a wizard in developing electronics and devices. And I think this is the way of the future. I think the public is really getting aware of physiologic measurement by the use of wearables and apps, and especially people who are the young millennials. They're interested in tech devices and health and consciousness. And this is going to, I think, make people more aware of biofeedback as they become more aware of their ability to monitor and then eventually regulate or control their own health.
Hmm. Yeah, perhaps if it's marketed as a Jedi training course, you'll get a lot of kids into it.
I'm always curious, George. Yeah. This is a random question, but there's a lot of people that are very concerned about their electrosensitivity, smart meters, or even 5G or cell phones. Are you at all aware of devices that people can wear that will allow them to monitor that kind of sensitivity?
I have about 20 or 30 of these devices, and I rotate and use them to test them out and see how they work. And there are some problems with them, but I don't see any real difficulty with EMFs at these small levels. So I think even wearing devices to monitor sleep are really pretty innocuous, and they tell you a lot of information about what's happening with oxygen saturation and respiration and heart rate variability during sleep. Most heart attacks, for example, occur during sleep.
Really?
And you want to be aware of those changes and how your deep sleep, light sleep, and REM sleep occur during a night. Wow. And what the effects of things like alcohol and overeating have on your sleep patterns. So we're learning a lot about that as I go through and evaluate how useful these devices are. And I think Hal's really on the cutting edge of developing some of these wearables and apps.
Yeah, I mean, one of the other ones is for sleep apnea. Some of them are quite good at showing you that your oxygen levels drop during the night and your breathing rate drops. And it's really useful to see that. And often it's a matter of getting a CPAP machine or even just changing your posture, your head posture, so that you're not blocking off the airways. Hmm. Yeah, the other thing, when we talk about the amount of radiation coming from these little devices, it's usually BLE, which is Bluetooth Low Energy. It's not terribly significant compared to what's coming out of your cell phone and what's going to be coming out of the 5G networks that we're being surrounded by. And it's, that really concerns me. And yet there's no escaping it. Everybody's going to have a 5G network in their pocket. And every 150 meters or so, you're going to have a cell tower. And we're going to be just bombarded. And there's really no way to protect yourself from it. So we're the guinea pigs, you know.
Yeah. Right. I'd be much more worried about that than I would about the wearables and apps.
Yeah.
Yeah, though I would imagine that the countries leading the charge on 5G, i.e. China, we should watch closely to see if they have any detrimental health effects from their deployed.
In Korea, especially.
Korea, yeah. They're already doing that.
Cancer can take 20 years. to really show up.
That's true. We have this long-term
issue. So we're long, you know, we're guinea pigs for several years, and then you'll find out, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
The mutations will survive. Wow.
And here we are talking about devices that help in healthcare. Mm. And at the same time, parallel to this is devices we're concerned about in our health.
That's right.
So it really is a double-edged sword. I do think, though, that the emphasis that Apple and others are putting on movement towards a healthcare device with the Apple Watch and with other tie-ins.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a minute. The Apple Watch supposedly has a lot of device medical type applications to it. Have you tried any of those? Have you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, what's your assessment so far?
It's amazingly accurate and I think very useful. Things like fall detection, where they automatically call 911, is an incredible feature. The actual real-time EKG that's built in now is very useful. It's already saved some people's lives. So we're moving ahead, and Apple is moving ahead as fast as it can to develop the Apple Watch into a healthcare device, basically.
Yeah, it almost called 9/11 on me when I was chopping wood the other day. yeah, it's true. Funny.
Really?
Yeah, it said, did you fall? You know, started asking me. It said, please respond. I think it's really interesting. They have set up a program so that they're doing research with Apple Watch data, too, which look quite intriguing.
So I just wanted to call in and support your future focus and the future of healthcare. And I'm really happy to say hi to Hal and Mr. and Mrs. Future.
Well, thanks, George.
Thank you, George.
If people want to know more information, what would you suggest?
Well, I've recently moved my offices up to the One Market Street in San Francisco. I'm on the 36th floor, and I also have a satellite office in Sausalito for the benefit of people up in the North Bay. So they could reach me through Googling the Biofeedback Institute or Biofeedback San Francisco and find me that way.
Okay, fantastic. Well, thank you, George, for checking in.
And we want to keep the people knowing about what the future of healthcare is.
All right.
Thanks, George.
Thanks a lot, George. Great talking to you.
Good to talk with you. Bye-bye.
Happy holidays. Merry Christmas.
Yeah. So George goes back to the 70s too, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Biofeedback.
He was there before I was.
Really?
3 years, three or 4 years ahead of me.
Wow. So you knew about him when you were a student?
Yes. And, you know, the first conference I went to was in 1974, and I haven't missed a conference since. Yeah. And
wow.
It's a wonderful group of people who really, they're psychologists, psychiatrists, other health practitioners, rehabilitation medicine people who just really want to help the world. Hmm. So it's, you know, you go to this conference, and it's not competition, it's so much cooperation.
Beautiful.
It's really wonderful.
Real healers with their biofeedback devices.
Well,
I'd like to get a little bit into the biofeedback and neurofeedback and what the connection with that is, but we'll do it after the break.
Good.
I think we're going to go out right now. We'll be right back. This is the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show, talking to Dr. Hal Myers on the future of biofeedback. So if you have any questions for Hal, this is a good time to call at 831-479-1080. Talk to you shortly. Hey, folks, welcome back to the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show. And we've got some texts for you, Hal. Our friend Gabrielle in New Jersey says, Hal reminds me of the way that Tibetan Buddhists, Tonka's mantras and other visualizations and vibrations operate in order to train the brain toward a specific wave pattern that generates geometric patterns in that brain. They all somehow combine to create a single pointed concentration. She wants to know, are you familiar with what waves are generated by such practices? I guess waves generated by meditation. Did the science come out of looking at various religions or spiritual practices?
Well, Elmer Green in the early 70s took a portable EEG machine to India and monitored some of the gurus meditating. and found that they're basically producing this alpha brainwave pattern. And that's why this idea of alpha for meditation got very popular in the early 70s. So everybody was trying to do alpha as if you produced alpha, you'd become a great meditator. And it could be just a covariant, not necessarily the way of producing meditation, but it's a state that seems to occur when you do meditate, much increased alpha activity, but also a decrease in autonomic activity, such as skin conductance. So you've heard of cold, clammy hands. So the clamminess is the sweat gland activity increasing, and the coldness is increased sympathetic activity, closing the blood vessels around your arms and periphery, and so that your hands get cold. So as you relax, you teach yourself through biofeedback to increase blood flow to the hands, decrease the sweating, and also decrease the alpha activity in the brain. You get into much more, you know, sympathetic state and a relaxed state. Mm. And one of the easiest ways to do that is through breathing at about 6 breaths per minute. We've got our device called the Easy Air Light device, and that's a good way of training.
Now, is that slowing it down a little bit for most people?
The average is about 12 to 15 breaths per minute.
Really? Okay, so it's like slowing down a lot.
I mean, you wouldn't want to breathe at 6 breaths per minute all the time, but it's certainly when if you're not doing anything, for example, you're in a conversation, someone's talking, you go, okay, breathe in for 4 seconds, breathe out for 6 seconds. And then you start talking. And then you get into the breathing again, and it calms you in between instead of being there just, you know, on edge, always stressed.
So it's a way of reducing the anxiety a little bit.
That's it. You were asking about the difference between neurofeedback and biofeedback.
Yes.
Neurofeedback just means monitoring from the brain itself, whereas biofeedback is monitoring from just about anywhere else in the body. So the peripherals, the non-neurofeedback, you could look at muscle activity, heart rate activity, sweat gland activity, temperature changes throughout the body, and other postural things and all. But the neurofeedback is specifically looking at brainwave frequencies in the brain. If you look up Maggie's story on YouTube, there's two or three of them. One of them is about this young girl, Maggie, who a few years ago presented to one of our distributors that mothers told them about their daughter who had 100 seizures a day at, I think, 5 years old. And he said, you know what I do? We work with biofeedback. And so he got in touch with one of the experts in brainwave monitoring. We taught the parents how to hook her up. And then after about 10 sessions online, she slept through the night for the first time
in her life.
And then after about, I think it was about 60 sessions, she was totally free of epileptic seizures. And we had a 3-year follow-up on that. They presented at the conference. It's a so touching story. You should watch it on YouTube. It's phenomenal.
My.
What they did is they identified the areas in the brain which were producing the abnormal activity and taught her how to suppress them. And it seems to have lasted.
Consciously.
The brain seems to be adaptive enough to change those things. So it's also very useful for PTSD and head trauma and Asperger's syndrome and autistic spectrum disorders and all.
What about after a stroke?
Well, I said after stroke. After stroke, you brainwave training, but mostly I think the muscle feedback training, looking at the affected limb and then training to increase the activity of that area, and that actually affects the brain and enhances that activity in collateral areas.
Hmm. And what about pain relief?
Yeah.
Are you able to use biofeedback for pain relief?
Sure. Yeah. My doctor was on that. Doctorate. I did my doctorate and postdoctorate in pain control using galvanic skin response biofeedback. And my postdoc was working with angina patients at the Royal Victoria Hospital in Montreal, part of McGill. And we taught the patients how to decrease their sweat gland activity, their sympathetic arousal. Then when they got the pain, that was a signal to incorporate what they learned from the GSR, so they could learn how quickly relax. And pain, chest pain, is from increase in heart rate, blood pressure, or both. So if you can keep them both under control, you don't need as much blood to the heart, and you don't experience the pain. So we got about a 50% decrease in drug use, Inderol and Nitro. And we also got them to go about 30% longer on a treadmill exercise until they got pain. So it's very effective for that. Pain is often is being able to distract yourself. It's just interesting, one of the things I do, like when I go to the dentist, I'll dig my finger into my nail into one of my other fingers.
Oh, really?
And because your brain can't pay attention to two different pain sources at the same time too well.
Oh.
So you shift it from one to the other, right?
Sort it really is a good trick to do that. Or if you're doing exercise, bite your tongue a little bit, and you'll be able to exercise probably another 20% longer.
To increase your stamina.
More push-ups.
Hurt yourself a little, huh?
What about tickling? Well, that's a good way for
turns off that it turns off that negative feedback. I don't think I can do anymore. You know, you start focusing on something else.
Change your focus. So we have a caller, Mrs. Ridger?
We do. Change your focus.
Yeah, I've got a couple other texts in for as well. So let's do the caller first.
We have Richard in Felton who has a question for Hal. Hi, Richard.
Hi. I was wondering if you're aware of evoked EEG. And I'm just going to throw out a couple phrases here and then get your response. I understand that the U.S. CIA was using targeted microwave energy against other people in the embassies there in Moscow. And then we had recent thing going on in Cuba with the so-called mystery illness. Mm-hmm. I mentioned a UCSD researcher who did research on that and tracked it back to a researcher from Cornell named Frey effect. And I was wondering if you're aware of that, where not only the ability to remotely monitor and pick up somebody's brain waves, but then to also be able to override or jam them. And how could you ever differentiate whether your brain waves are yourself or whether they're being accentuated or somehow altered?
Well, it's interesting. I just read an article. They are not so sure that they were using what they thought they were using microwaves to affect people in Cuba and the Cuban embassy and others. And they seem to have debunked it. But the fact is that you can use lights and sound to evoke changes in the brain. You can use sound light generators and it could be specific frequencies. But I don't know if there's any, if they've actually got any concrete proof that it actually was happening through the effects like that from outside sources. Definitely, you know, as I said, we can change our brainwave activity and it can be done and you can enhance it through binaural beats and sounds and lights and other techniques.
I'm curious which brainwave activities are most interesting. Are a lot of them studied or just a few connected to a few conditions?
Well, again, you know, as I said, for autistic spectrum disorder, ADHD, Asperger's and all, increasing sensory motor activity is usually what's happening, what's useful. But often you'll do a QEG, a 19 or 24 channel, to see where the deficits occur in the brain. And then you'll train up those areas and down the other areas that are overactive. Mm. It depends a lot on what you're trying to accomplish.
Right. So we're looking at brainwave patterns and how that affects muscular control.
Well, that's one, but, you know, it could be used for head trauma and for PTSD, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. What about prosthetics and things like that?
It's brain and muscle together
control,
for prosthetics
that's right. Yeah. What about Kundalini? There's a question on Kundalini. Do you have an understanding of that?
Well, I mean, I'm not familiar with studies are done with Kundalini and EEG activity.
Shifting the body between intense heat and cold, sweating one moment, shivering the next.
Yeah, some of those gurus can do that. It's quite amazing, actually. They can warm up, they can be in the Himalayas warming themselves up, being buried for a while and be able to increase their temperature and be able to survive.
Or David Blaine, one of the magicians.
We actually monitored David Blaine.
Did you?
In New York. He was on a block of ice, and we were monitoring his respiration, his heart rate and all, and he was on a block of ice for, I don't know, about 20 hours or so, and he...
Really?
Yeah, he was successfully increasing his body physiology.
By breathing?
Breathing and relaxing, and yeah. You know, you can do it to some extent. There's a guy named Jack Schwartz who could poke needles through his arm, and a lot of the Sufis do that. We had somebody at a conference recently where they put a large needle right through their cheeks. Or through their...
This is a popular magician antic as well.
Well, but they actually did it. I mean, we saw... And no blood. They pulled the thing, a dirty skewer.
And didn't get infected.
And didn't get infected. That's right. Wow. There's a lot we just don't know, but there's certainly a lot of potential being able to control our own physiology. Mm-hmm. And so it's been exciting to work in this field for so many years where, you know, we're discovering something all the time.
So have there been any kids that have been brought up with biofeedback where they've learned all these skills? And
well, actually, another interesting thing is back when I was doing my doctorate, I did a program with the education department, and we monitored fourth graders, and we trained them to control using GSR, and we had a control group and real group. One had a fixed tone, was just and the other ones had the real device that, you know, would go up in frequency and down in frequency as they relaxed. And on the state anxiety state scale for children, the trait anxiety scale for children, and the Pearson self-concept, the kids all did better who were in the biofeedback group. They all did behaviorally better, but these did better. And there was a generalization of the Pearson self-concept. How you feel about yourself because you've learned to control something like your own physiology seems to generalize to their everyday lives.
Wow.
So teaching that in schools could be very, very helpful, I think. Teaching meditation is really important.
Oh, wow.
Deep relaxation.
And being an alternative to a lot of the drugs the kids have to take.
Yeah, I mean, instead of a competitive environment, some kind of a cooperative one.
Cooperative training.
That's it.
Should be part of the gym class, I guess. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we're talking to Dr. Hal Myers on biofeedback. We'll be back for the final segment. Give us a call at 479-1080 if you have any questions, and we'll talk to you all shortly. Okay, welcome back to the Dr. and Mrs. Fuchsia Show. We're talking to Dr. Hal Myers on biofeedback. And Maggie's story, we got a question from our audience about Maggie's story.
Yeah, you made a reference to that. People would really like some more information so they can track that down. Could you repeat that?
I would search, you go to YouTube and search for Maggie's story, M-A-G-G-I-E-S story. And it's the first one. It says Maggie's story was presented by Jay Gunkelman at the Association for Applied Psychophysiology and Biofeedback. It's right at the top of the list. It was put up 1 year ago.
Very touching story.
BFE biofeedback.
Just shows what you can do. One of the other things, by the way, that biofeedback's used for is for incontinence and for pelvic floor pain.
Incontinence? Really?
Mm-hmm. We've developed vaginal rectal sensors that are self-inserted and picks up on the muscle activity. And you've probably all heard of Kegel exercises for pre and post childbirth, which is also really useful for pre and post prostatectomies, because often with a prostatectomy, you lose control of the bladder, both fecal and urinary. And so if you strengthen the muscles pre the operation, that post-operation, the muscles are much stronger and much greater chance of coming back and giving you control much more quickly. Hmm. And same thing with childbirth. Often the muscles are stretched out and torn. And so it's very easy. We've got a little home trainer called the U-Control, and you plug in the sensors and you use it, and it prompts you to hold the tension for 5 or 10 seconds and then relax and hold it again. And after a while, the muscles, just like doing curls or any other exercises, strengthen. And again, so then you don't have to think about holding the urine and it'll just stay in.
Okay, I've just put the link up for Maggie's story on the Dr. Future Show website. Go to drfutureshow.com, go to our links page, and there it is, the last link for today, December 24th. Okay, Maggie's story. We also got a question for you regarding the implications of 5G in terms of biological freedom from electromagnetic intrusion. Deliberate intrusion despite scientific studies or adequate data. Mass impact dictated top down, just like the communists. What do you think?
Well, I think it's really premature for them to be rolling out 5G. I don't know if you know how a cell phone works. The worse the signal is, if you're in an elevator, your phone cranks up the energy as much as possible so it can get the signal through. And that's on 3G, 4G. But 5G, it's a much higher frequency. Some animal studies have really adverse effects. I was just talking to a doctor just a few minutes ago, and he's very, very in tune with this and very concerned about it. He's a biomedical engineer as well.
Dr. Merritt.
Yeah.
Yeah. We just had him on the show a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, right. So it is very concerning, and we're being the guinea pigs. They said, we may not know for 20 years what the effects are on us.
Yeah.
And there's no escaping it. There's nothing. You can't put a tin hat on because
it's just going to happen. You can't wear a little pendant that supposedly counteracts it or anything like that.
I don't believe so anyway. No. It's
very
powerful.
What can you do to detect it?
Well, you don't have to worry about it. It's going to be bombarding you everywhere because the towers are up every 150 meters or so, or every 200 or 300 feet.
But I'm curious, how can you take this invisible information and make it visible?
You mean how you can see it?
Yes.
You mean like a detector, like
that's
a 5G detector?
I don't actually think it's necessary because, right now, can you see 3G, 4G and the Wi-Fi in your house?
No.
You can detect...
Well, I can certainly detect a signal if I hold my cell phone close to my ear, which is why I never talk on the phone. Yeah. I never hold it close to my
head. So it's individual sensitivities to it, but there's no question that we are being bombarded with this. From a couple of things you can do, we have a timer on our Wi-Fi. We turn it off at night, and you turn your phone off completely at night, kill it completely, so
this
it's not near you.
To give you some space where you're free of the bombardment.
Yes. And you can also, there's a company, I think it was called JRS Mobile or JR or something or other from England, where they have a low energy Wi-Fi that you can use. And we got that for our house. That cuts down the Wi-Fi even during the day. And if you don't need Wi-Fi, you can hardwire your devices right through your Ethernet. That's even better. Just turn it off completely unless somehow you need the signals. Put your phone in airplane mode and turn it on and off every once in a while so you're not bombarding yourself. But the problem is the towers are going to be everywhere and electric meters are around now. And,
well, I'm thinking that maybe the Starlink might be the answer. Once we have the satellites up, we don't have to use 5G.
Well, you still have to communicate with them. So,
how do you communicate with the Starlink
network? Exactly. It's going to still be a strong signal to get there.
Probably maybe like a Wi-Fi type. Though I understand Apple is now designing special antennas to pick up satellite transmissions directly.
Yeah, but still, you need to transmit to the satellite, and you've got to get the signals back, so you're still going to need a
some kind of strong signals. Right. Right, so there was no escape, in other words. And when it goes global like that, there literally
is. It's pretty much no escape, and unfortunately, they're not. Really should be doing more tests to determine the effects on humans.
Can citizen scientists do any tests?
Well, yeah, I'm sure they can. I mean, there's loads of information on the Internet, but the point is they're rolling it out. T-Mobile, I think, has already rolled out 5G, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, for 600 megahertz frequency, that's a well-known frequency range, which they're not too worried about. It's more the AT&T and Verizon frequencies of 28 gigahertz and 39 gigahertz.
That's right, the higher frequencies.
Which have been very little studies on for their effect.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about microwaves. I mean, you'll be standing in front, put your head in a microwave oven, so we don't know how strong it is and what the effects are going to be yet.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Wi-Fi is very close to microwave frequency.
There's some of them, they're quite up there now.
2.4 and 2.5 gigahertz.
Well, your phones in the home can be as much as 5.6 gigahertz.
So
we're surrounded by that. Yeah, but these are much more powerful signals because they've got to get all the way from the towers to you versus just from, you know, your local phone in your house.
Now, if you can use biofeedback to train your brain to remap its response to things such as incontinence, is it possible that you can use biofeedback to retrain yourself to respond to these frequency toxins?
I don't know the answer to that. I would hope so, but I think that's going to be quite an interesting experiment.
I mean, what does the frequency do to the body?
Well, in some cases, they claim it creates local heating of the tissue. So it's like putting yourself in a microwave. Like putting your phone next to your head, they claim that there may be more tumors on that side of the head if someone's holding the phone next to their heads.
Okay. But I've heard that.
But the idea of doing a full body CAT scan through X-rays, it can be really damaging, and so you're not really sure what frequencies are doing what to the body.
And so it's basically unknown.
Even an MRI, I was talking to Carl about that, and he says, that's a very strong electromagnetic field, even though it's not ionizing it. It can have an adverse effect on your body, and so field has really got. There's a lot to be explored there. Unfortunately, as I said, we're the guinea pigs.
Right. Well, and ionizing radiation, is that the kind of radiation that's associated with the nuclear blast?
Well, it's X-rays,
Any kind of...
Well, there's ionizing and non-ionizing radiation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the ionizing is the more dangerous.
Yeah.
Because it creates free radicals.
Yeah. But in the meantime, don't overstress yourself. Learn to relax. Learn to meditate. Use some biofeedback. Take hot baths. Breathe. Do things that are going to relax you and try not to rely too much on drugs and alcohol.
Is there any biofeedback equipment that you can get for the home these days that's reasonably
priced? Well, we still have our GSR2, which is only $75, and you can get that right from Thought Technology. And then we have our little easy air breathing light, which, as I said, is a really great way to remind you to breathe at about 6 breaths per minute.
And what's that cost?
It's $30 or two for $50, I believe.
So it's just patterning your breathing on the
Yeah, you
light.
Just look at it and you go, oh. But again, if you look on our website or on YouTube, you'll see EZ-Z Light, Air Light 2019. You'll see a little demo of the light itself. It's really calming, very calming.
That's thoughttechnology.com.
Yeah, THOUGHT, Thought Technology.
Yeah, or Thought Tech. Yeah. And that also works.
That's it.
So are you working on any new projects now?
Well, we're working on, as I said, a whole bunch of wireless sensors and, this muscle sensing and EEG, small EEG sensors for brainwave and heart rate and posture. so many of the products that I actually designed back in the 70s, which is hopefully going to be getting around to now, it's been kind of frustrating to watch so many of the companies that used our gold standard equipment to develop their own products, and we didn't do it. So now we're thinking we're going to get in there. But the problem is, you know, you can get very inexpensive devices from China. You can get an $11 heart rate watch from Xiaomi.
Or your phone, your Apple Watch.
Oh, and the Apple Watch has got so much. I actually went down to Apple more than 10 years ago, and they brought me up to the third floor in the dark, and so they couldn't identify who I was talking to.
I see. Really?
And they picked my brains on skin conductance.
Really?
And Samsung came to our offices, and I actually built in skin conductance in the back of one of their phones for them, and heart rate variability.
Wow.
And then they went off and did their own thing also. Uh-huh. So, you know, it's fun to pioneer, but you have to somehow figure out how to capitalize on it.
Mm. Any new forms of feedback? Like you using ascending and descending tones, and how about visuals?
Well, yeah, and we're tying ourselves into virtual reality. There's several companies using our equipment with VR now, which is really useful. They're actually finding VR in hospitals. You combine via feedback and VR for pain to distract patients when they're in the hospital undergoing painful treatments or frustrating treatments. Mm-hmm. So VR is a really good combination. It can take you somewhere else and help you.
Yeah, maybe the dentists will be using it too.
Well, yeah. Well, actually, we use it in dentistry. It's interesting. It's used in dentistry. There's a group, Howie Hinden and his group in New York, uses it to identify the proper bite. And they look at heart rate variability and respiration, and they can tell when they've done a proper adjustment on the bite by seeing how it all relaxes.
Wow. Well, this has been a really great show. I'm so glad that you're here with us.
Yeah, thanks, Al.
My pleasure. It's been so much fun.
Yeah. Have a happy holidays, folks. Merry Christmas to you out there tomorrow. Happy Hanukkah and Kwanzaa and whatever else you're celebrating this holiday. Thanks for listening. We're talking to you. We'll have one more show this year, just before New Year's. And then 2020!
All right, everybody, this is KSCO Santa Cruz signing off for Christmas Eve, and I hope your holidays are grand, and we'll be back next Future Tuesday.
And Merry Christmas, Jerusalem Ranch Gang out there. Shout out to you.